श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय। श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय। श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय। श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमन भगवतन की जय। श्री वेणुगीत की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि बोल। सो प्रणाम एंड गुड इवनिंग टू ऑल ऑफ यू। वेलकम। वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग विथ आवर सीरीज ऑफ लेक्चर्स ऑन द वेणुगीता सॉन्ग ऑफ द फ्लूट। टुडे क्लास नंबर 15। So, congratulations, having survived such a journey, still here. And we are today starting verse 14 from this chapter, chapter 21 of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So, as usual, let's make some brief recap of what we studied some days ago, which was verse 13, in which the gopis were trying to hide further their bhav by, after speaking about Madhurya projection with the deer and the devis on heaven, they direct their attention towards the Vatsalya ranks, towards cows and calves, as you may remember. And they describe them with the upraised vessel-like ears, drinking the nectar of the flute song. And while doing that, the cows are chewing grass and they stop chewing, become stamba, and grass starts to fall. And the calves, recent, just newborn calves, 1-2 days ago, they were drinking from their udders and they become stamba, also paralyzed, while torrents of milk still flow, and they're like kind of do a abhishek of the calves, if you will, and eventually nourish the earth. So in that situation, this described that the cows, like shedding tears of ecstasy, they, in their heart of hearts, they are embracing Krishna. So basically, this is a unique picture the gopis are visualizing in this particular verse. So again, trying a preaching strategy, if you will, trying to take the attention away from the Madhurya camp and trying to direct their discourse towards the Vatsalya ranks. And I'm very beautifully describing different currents. The currents of the flute sound, creating another current of affection in the form of milk, all of which, again, the affection of Krishna is coming, is entering into the cows. The cows fill with prem, express their prem in the form of milk. And that milk, which is the maha maha prasad, if you will, prem of the prem of the prem, falls onto the land of Vrindavan, nourishing the earth, basically. We try to share a picture of such a situation, them in stamba, paralyzed, and grass falling, milk falling from the earth, and the earth drinking such prem, coming in the form of the liquid of liquids, basically. Also, we made this analogy that actually the nectar of the flute is like rasa, like we say, from the moon comes soma rasa, so from moon face Krishna, Mukha Chandra, sometimes Krishna is called Purna Chandra. Purna Chandra means complete moon, not like full moon also. A complete moon means, okay, if nectar is coming from the moon, then if Krishna is the complete moon, complete nectar is coming from him. No? Above the so-called nectar from other places like Soma Rasa, heavenly planets, and so on. There are different notions of Amrita, but the ultimate Amrita is coming here. Other Amrita, the nectar of his lips through the flute and so on. So the cows were drinking with their ears, cup-like ears. We spoke a little bit about the importance of hearing and seeing through hearing. And in their hearts of hearts meditating Hari, since there were so many tears that they were not able to see Krishna. So they were taking him into their innermost chamber of their hearts and embracing him internally. And as we mentioned, regarding the calves, they were just born, they didn't have any established relationship with Krishna, as the cows did. They knew Krishna from day one, but the calves were in their day one. They're just born. But immediately hearing the flute, already exhibiting ecstatic symptoms. So the gopis are like astonished. Like this boy, this little baby calf was born yesterday, and he's showing such a love for Krishna without, I mean, knowing him for a day, knowing his flute song for a day, and that's the power of his Venu Gita, basically, Venu Nada. And of course, the classical conclusion of this verse and all of them is basically gopis appreciating the good fortune of the cows, deprecating their own position, if you will, in the ecstasy of their Purvarag, and praying, may we be born as cows or calves in Braj and have their good fortune, where they are forgetting their own bodily necessities, their bodily extensions, family members, they are totally self-forgetful and just dedicated to drink and honor the nectar of Krishna's flute. Not like us, who are attached grihamedis to house, family. The gopis think of themselves in those terms, although they are the topmost transcendentalists and more renounced personalities, basically. But that's the paradox of Prem. So, today we are back to the sky again, not to the sky on the level of the devas and devis, a little bit below. And we will speak about the birds of Braj. So let's go to verse, today's verse, which is verse 14. We can recite it together in Sanskrit. It's usually the Vasantatilak meter. And again, the birds will be here, as we will see very nicely, compared like an analogy with sages, with munis, sitting in the trees of the in the branches of the trees and peacefully in samadhi, like samadhi, hearing the sound of the flute with absorption, rapt attention. So the verse says, Prayu vatamba bihaga munayo vanesmin krishnekshitam taduditam kalavernu gitam aruhya yedruma bhujan ruchira pravalam shrimbanti milita drisho bigatanya vachaha. So, translation says like this. One gopi speaking to another. And we will start interesting. It says, O mother, in this forest, all the birds have risen. All the birds have risen onto the beautiful branches of the trees to see Krishna. With closed eyes, they are simply listening in silence to the sweet vibrations of his flute, and they are not attracted by any other sound. Surely, these birds are on the same level as great sages. So this today's verses, we see again deep appreciation that the gopis are projecting into the environment, and big, great greed increasing in their heart of hearts. So let's analyze a little bit this verse, word by word, as usual, and we'll try to unpack its content. The first line, prayova tamba vihagamuna yovaneshmin. To prayaha, or praya, means for the most part. So we'll see what's the meaning of that. In this case, it applies to the birds. For the most part, birds will act as this verse shows, although we have seen some other exceptions. A peacock is a bird, but the peacocks are not like still like the birds. But I remember they were dancing and all. So for the most part of the birds, that's the implication, they will act like monies, quiet, meditating. So praya means for the most part. I'm clarifying because it's not connected immediately with the next word. So we'll see what's the meaning of the bata. So bata means certainly. It's like similar to this syllable sma that we saw in some verses, like express like astonishment or something. So it's a word that expresses like chamatkar. It could be like certainly. This is happening. This is a fact. Or some acharyas have said this word also represents lamentation. Oh, the gopis like lamenting, oh, we are not as fortunate as them, or hankering, we want to be like them. All these different possibilities are included simultaneously. Astonishment of the situation, what they are seeing, the good hankering, we will like that. Lamentation, we don't have that. Whatever the case, all of them can be applicable in sequence, even. No? So certainly, bata. Then bihaga. No, amba, sorry. Bata amba. Amba is an interesting term. We'll explain it later. Amba means mother. So one gopi is addressing others, "Oh mother, oh mother." So maybe their mothers are there. Is there a mixture of Vatsalya and Madhu? What's going on? Bihaga. Bihaga means the birds. It's a word for bird. Bihaga. So Bihaga means the birds. Munayo is the plural for Muni. Muni means sage. So Munayo means sages. Bane Ashmin. Bane Ashmin means in this forest. The gopis are expressing here, referring to Vrindavan. So second line further clarifies the idea. Krishnekshitam tat uditam kalabenu gita. So what are doing these birds, sages like birds, doing in the forest of Vrindavan? So they say Krishna ikshitam. No? Krishna means Krishna. Very good. some of my questions are easier than others. Ikshitam, what does it mean? No? Ikshitam has to do with iksha, with eyes. So to see, in order to see Krishna, basically. That's the idea of Krishna ikshitam. In order to see Krishna, tat uditam means created by him, by Krishna, which refers to his flute song, which comes now. Kala venu gitam. So kala means melodious, or also sweet and soft. All these implications are in the word kala, which refers to the next words, which are venu gitam, which over and over again appear in almost every verse of the chapter. So, in order to see Krishna, they will enter into the branches of the trees to catch this unique, distinctive Venu Gita. Third line. Aruhya yadruma bhujan ruchira pravalam. Aruhya means rising. And then ye means which, referring to the birds. Druma bhujan. Druma is the name for trees. Interestingly, Prabodhananda Saraswati makes a connection regarding druma, because you can say many words for trees, no? Briksha and druma and so on. We spoke about the trees a little bit already, but Prabodhananda Saraswati connects the word druma in both here, and he connects with the word in Sanskrit dravanti, which means to melt. So he basically says even the trees are melting in Vrindavan when here in the flute. He makes that point, as I want to share, since we mentioned Druma, and he connects with the notion of melting. As Gurmukh says, all of them are made of Bhava, so their bodies actually melt, not just symbolically, my heart is melting. Because you can say that here, but I don't believe you, that's happening in every sense of the term, at least. But in Vrindavan, that's happening, because their bodies are made of meltable substances, if you will. They're made of Baba. So Druma Bhujam. Druma Bhujam means, the branches. So the idea is they are rising to the branches of the trees, these birds. Ruchira Prabalam. And what's more about these trees? Ruchira Prabalam. We use some of those terms when we were speaking about the shoots with which Krishna was decorating his head with mango buds and so on. So Ruchira Prabalam means having very beautiful, like shoots, the trees. Here we are speaking about the trees. So the last line says, Srimbanti milita drisho biga tanya bachaha. So Srimbanti means what? You have to know this one. Srimbanta shrakata Krishna.
Hearing.
They hear. So the birds are hearing the song. Milita drisha. Milita drisha means closing their eyes. Bigata anya bachaha, and stopping all other sounds. So that's how they react to the flute song on the branches of the trees. While they're hearing that, they close their eyes and they mauna. Muni comes from that, mauna. So they stop all other sounds. Sanatana Goswami would say, all other sounds except for Krishna Krishna or Venukata, topics about what's going on, the flute. All other sounds, they stop. That stop. Or maybe they say the same in their own language they were saying, Krishna, Krishna, and speak about the flute. So, this is the word by word for the verse, so let's try to further unpack its implications. In connection to the previous verse, Sanatana Goswami gives the classical beginning of his purpose, all of them almost begin the same way, and Jiva Goswami basically repeats that. The gopis here say, how much more amazing this is. The cows tended by Krishna are fortunate, previous verse, fine. But can the good fortune of the birds in the forest be described? So this is always like the entrance to every verse. Okay, great. This particular personality from the previous verse are enormously fortunate. But what to speak about the good fortune of, and all the tension of the gopis just go in that direction. Look, all of them to the sky. Then, oh, the cow. Oh, look, the river. So in this way, their chamatkar, their astonishment escalates exponentially. After every single verse, their astonishment is growing more and more, and their purvarag is flourishing and taking the form of, as we mentioned, the next step that will be, interestingly, the next chapter after the Venu Gita, which is that one, the Gopi Vastra Harana Lila. So we see how one thing is taken to the other. No? And after Gopi Vastra Harana Lila, as Guru Mahārāj spoke a little bit today, the most full consummation of that is Rasa Lila, which will come some chapters after. In between this, the Govardhan Lila, where Krishna is given a 1 week trailer and darshan. You can see me uninterruptedly for a week. You wanted that? You have it 1 week without interruption. Nobody in Braj had that option before, because Krishna is all every day going here, going there. So they see him in turns. But Govardhan Lila was 1 week non-stop darshan. So you can imagine how all those things are increasing in this case in the gopis. They're longing for full consummation of their relationship. So Rasa Lila is required for that to happen. But we see the unfolding. Venu Gita here, Gopi Vastra Harana Lila, where Krishna is stealing the clothes of the gopis and unofficially marrying them, and many of them are connected to this particular Venu Gita. Then 1 week darshan, at this point the gopis are in a forest fire of wanting to consummate the relationship. So then Rasa Lila comes, and so many other things happen after that in the other Gitas, interestingly, because after the Gopi, I don't want to go there for too much, but to understand a little bit how nicely the narrative of the Bhagavatam is unfolding sequentially. It's not just like, how do you say, like randomly, no? Like, this chapter and next, let's see what happens. There's a connection between each of them. For example, after Rasa Lila, the gopis are having Rasa Lila with Krishna every night, but it is explained that after a time, the divine greed in the gopis was, now we want to meet Krishna in the day also. It's not enough every night now. We want to have a day-like meeting. At that point, midday meeting was not there. So then after that, you have the Jugal Gita. In between there is the Pranaya Gita and the Gopi Gita, but then comes Jugal Gita, which is what? Gopis lamenting during the day. They are meeting Krishna at night, but they are lamenting in the day that they cannot join Krishna during the day. And they're developing that new desire. We want to meet him during the day also. When the Jugal Gita finishes, what's the next section? Krishna is killing Aristasura. And what happens after killing Aristasura? Radha Kund, Shyama Kund manifest. And what happens after that? They start to meet on a daily basis at midday there. So you see how the desires that are sprouting in the hearts of the devotees naturally take the lila to unfold in a certain way, so Krishna can reciprocate to those desires, because he's only existent for serving the desires of his devotees. That's his business, basically. His bhakta vatsalya. He's tending to the greed of his devotees. That's his business in Vrindavan. So, here we are in the Venu Gita, going back. Beginning point of all this unfolding, actually. This is like the very beginning point of all this explosion, more than unfolding. So let's analyze to begin with the word Amba, which, is, as I mentioned, means mother, which is an interesting term, because, as you can imagine, here Yashoda is not here, Rohini is not here, the gopis' mothers are not here. It would be like a total Rasa Bath, no? The gopis singing about Krishna, and the mothers are there, and like, what's going on? No? So why they say Amba? Why they say mother? No? So to begin with, we have to again understand the gopis are in self-forgetfulness. No? They are unaware of their own self, unaware of their bodies, of their identity. They are just totally lost and found in the sound of the flute. So at that moment where the Bhagavad Gita is taking place, there is not one single gopi that deserves, if you will, the title mother because of being the mother of some of the other gopis present. That, there's not that different of age. It's not that you have a mother, one gopi of, I don't know, 15 and the other gopi of 40 or something. No? So the question is, why Amba? Because before we saw in previous verses, I think was verse 3, it says Swasakibhyo, no? That the gopis were amongst their own friends, Swasaki. Their own friends means like equals, not elders, basically. So here only we have gopis of the same sentiment. They are sharing, as we mentioned, their hearts and minds. They empathize, sympathize with each other. We feel the same for Krishna. So there's nobody there that is like their mother. So of course, if you want to explain all this in one word, it will be madness. Why they are calling themselves mother, because nobody is their mother. So acharyas on one level say, yeah, because of their madness, they are not aware who is who and which is the relationship among each. They are only aware of their relationship with Krishna or the relationship they would like to consummate. So they call each other mother, cousin, father, whatever. I mean, that's totally... No, they are so absorbed in their relationship with Krishna that they lose sight of any other sense of relationship, who was who and relation to whom, or oh mother. That's one way of explaining that. And of course, in the context of that madness, the gopis, for example, in this verse, again, they say, Baniyashmin, I forgot to say that when we wanted word by word, Baniyashmin means in this forest. Again, Ashmin means in this. While they are not in the forest, they are in the distance, but you should have said in that forest. But they are so much there, in their hearts of hearts, that they're saying in this forest, well, they are like miles away. So that repeats along the verses as well. So Sanatan Goswami, let me read something that Sanatan Goswami mentions in his Tika commentary on the word Amba. He says, these are words expressed due to the helplessness of Prem. So that's another way of saying, of explaining the situation of the gopis. In other words, the gopis are in a helpless situation, in separation from Krishna, desperately trying to meet him, drowning in Purva Rag, and they are giving support to each other. They are embracing each other, like a mother sometimes does with her daughter, whatever. She's giving support and embracing. Remember, verse 6, it was said, Abhire, Abhire. They embrace it to each other, the gopis, maybe you remember. So they were given this kind of support. So in that sense, one could say they call each other mother. One calls one other gopi mother, like because of the support received. Sometimes even Sri Radha receives the name Ambika, which Ambika is like a tender way of saying Amba. Like I think we explained that. Like when you say gopis and gopika, Amba, Ambika, like a tender way of referring to something. Because also she has some form of, in Vilapa Sumanjali, Raghunath Das Goswami said, Radha's love for her manjaris is bigger than thousands of oceans of Vatsalya. So, of course, the relationship is more Radha Dasyam, but sometimes the manjaris will feel that Sri Radha is like a mother to them. But sometimes it's like a friend, and sometimes it's like the mistress. Mostly, that's the mood, but all these combinations are present there. Srila Sanatana Goswami continues saying, Amba is in evocative in terms of being a mother directed to an own lady friend. Or maybe when Sakhi spoke this verse and embraced an elder Sakhi. So again, some other gopi may be there who is elder, but not that elder has to be one's mother, but elder. So sometimes, as Balaram is, again, Dauji, because of being 8 days older, but he almost is seen as a symbol of Vatsalya. I mean, it's not that old, but those are the ways of how in the Leela they express themselves. So sometimes Sangopi may be a little bit older, mother. So there's a way of explaining that without saying the gopis are mad. Still they are mad, transcendentally speaking, but... Or maybe because some of the gopis present there, Sanatana Goswami thinks are mothers, actually. Maybe it's not mother-daughter relationship, but some of the gopis are already mothers, young mothers, and some other gopi address one of those gopis and call her Amba, or mother. So just a clarification of why this term, O Mother, in the very beginning of the verse. So then going to the first word of the verse, Praya, as I already explained, for the most part, the idea here of the gopis is that with the exception mostly of the peacocks, and sometimes it is described the parrots and the cuckoos, all the other birds have adopted the course of followed by the monis. No? Like just sitting peacefully in a branch, closing their eyes and absorbing meditation. The ones that are depicted in this particular verse. They are not singing, they are not dancing like peacocks or like parrots or cuckoos. It is said that the parrots and the cuckoos are more like the devotees, no? singing and dancing. And the other birds are more like monis. There is a difference between monis and bhaktas. Monis are more like sages who practice austerity and silence, like yogis or something like this. We will see some of these comparisons developing in the purports. So the birds in this verse follow the way of the monis. No? The very word moni comes from mauna. Mauna means silence. So someone who engages in mauna is a moni. So these birds were sitting quietly in the branches of the trees and just half closed eyes, drinking, relishing the nectar of the flute with full concentration, like an accomplished yogi. One-pointed, ekagrata. And it's important to understand the example. Generally, birds are restless by nature. You don't see generally a bird like they cannot stop for too much. So the contrast here is even greater. No? They are just unmovable yogis, absorbed in hearing the sound. What must be that flute? That's, of course, the conclusion. Jiva Goswami continues explaining his own purpose that with the idea Krishna Ikshitam, that they are moving to the branches of the trees to see Krishna and to have some like nice vantage point of view to have darshan of Krishna, or also to be seen by Krishna, to receive his gracious glance. As Guru Maharaj explained today in the class, what's darshan, not so much I want to see Krishna, but I want to behave in such a way that Krishna wants to see me. I want to be seen by Krishna. I'm presenting myself so to receive the loving glance of Dauji Gopal and so on. So also it is said that, why it is said this, they want to be seen by Krishna because when they hear the flute, they enter into yogi-like, muni-like samadhi, so their eyes like stop seeing Krishna. So they know that will happen, so they know I will be seen by Krishna. I know I will be able to see Krishna because I hear the flute and I enter into samadhi. And they start to see Krishna, but with their internal eyes of meditation, basically. Or another option sometimes given is they are looking at Krishna, but they know, blinking will come at any moment. And we cannot tolerate that. So they see Krishna, they catch that particular darshan, and they take them to their hearts of hearts, and they close their eyes. So that image does not escape, if you will. And they trap him in their hearts. Sadavaridayam mayam sadanamaridayam taham. I am in the hearts of my devotees are my heart, Krishna says. I don't know anyone apart from them, they don't know anyone apart from me. We are mad in love with each other. That's the conclusion. So they are feeling that, no? Since we will open and our eyes and blink and the vision will be interrupted, better we catch him, take to our hearts, close our eyes and just meditate while seeing him internally. Or another option of Krishna Ikshitam, they are hearing in such a way that they are seeing Krishna. That's also an important point. They are hearing the flute, in this case, in such a way that hearing the flute takes them to a vision of Krishna. Sravanam takes you to Smaranam, another way of putting it. Nam takes you to Rupa. Hearing the name takes you to seeing the form. If we know how to hear, that hearing will become seeing, as we say. We start to see through our ears, basically. By hearing and by chanting, for example, Srinam, eventually, that will become a particular vision. Today, Guru Master, very interesting idea. While we were speaking with one devotee in Colombia, and he was mentioning that the devotee asked him about the meaning of the Mahamantra, the three words of the Mahamantra, and how that meaning can change according to one's inner affinity. Hare Krishna and Ram. How those three words may mean something for a Gopa, or with affinity towards that, or someone with affinity towards Madhurya Bhav. But at one point, Guru Maharaj mentioned, for someone who has affinity, for example, to Sakya Bhav, and it's greatly accomplished in chanting Srinam, that person will chant Srinam, and while chanting Srinam, Lila Smaranam will come naturally. Not forcibly, it's not like, I'm chanting and now I will imagine about that Lila and that period of the day. No. But naturally will sprout from Nam. Nam, as we say, Nam, Rupa, Guna, Lila. Nam will take you to the form, qualities, and it all converges into Lila. So we say for that person, he will, for example, enter into Lila Smaranam according to the Astakalya Lila, the 8 periods of the day in which the eternal Lila is flowing. So at some, the devotee may be chanting whatever, in connection to meditating in some period of the day in which Krishna is with Balaram, Purvan Lila, 8:24 till 10:48, for example, in the morning. They are leaving for Kau Gocharan Lila, this moment of the day. So he will chant Srinam, and for him or her, the words of the name, Hare Krishna Ram will mean Hare, Krishna, Hari will mean Hari, Krishna, Krishna will mean Krishna, and Ram will mean Balaram. Because those names are related to what's going on in the Lila that is sprouting from the chanting at that precise moment. Do you follow? But later he may be chanting and entering into meditation in regarding what's going on in the midday, where Balaram is not in the picture, and Krishna is with Radha. So at that moment, for that devotee, the meaning of the three words of the Mahamantra will take another turn. And Hare will mean invocative of Hara, Sri Radha. Ram will be a name for Krishna Ramana or Radha Raman in connection to her. And Krishna will be Krishna in connection to her. So for the same person, in different parts of his her meditation, Mahamantra will show different faces, interestingly. So all this happens again. By properly hearing, it will take us to all these different dimensions. This can't be imitated nor forced, but to know that those things are available and will happen eventually. And also in connection to getting back to the expression Krishnekshitam, again, that we translated as to see Krishna or to be seen by Krishna or seen by hearing or so. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that Krishnekshitam, again, generally translated in order to see Krishna, as applying the expression to the song of the flute. So he will say Krishnekshitam is only seen in Krishna, that Benugita. That song of the flute, it's only seen in Krishna. So originally the general translation is the birds are trying to see Krishna. But as you know, Sanskrit lends itself to other possibilities. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur takes, no. This song of the flute is only seen in Krishna. It cannot be possibly invented by anyone else. Nobody can do that. And that he further qualifies with the word tad uditam, which means created by him. That song of the flute, it's created, but like further specifying, it's his unique creation. All rights reserved. Something like that. Let me read you a little bit what he says in his purport, Sararta Darshani, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Ki Jai. As usual, he will recreate this dialogues between different people in between the verses, not different gopis speaking with each other. That's part of his style of revelation in his commentary. So one gopi spoke, in connection to the previous verse, remember, calves, cows and calves. So one gopi said, the calves, who are dumb animals in material consciousness, are only tasting material pleasures. On the other hand, the Atmaram Munis, or self-satisfied Munis, fixed in transcendental knowledge and renunciation, cannot be disturbed by Krishna. One gopi is saying that, but another gopi will say, no, this is not true. Krishna also attracts the Munis with his sweetness. Now, he's not only attracting ladies or animals, as the examples of the previous verses, even the Munis. All these birds, of course, you may say, but this verse is not speaking about Munis, it's speaking about birds who resemble Munis, but we'll see where the verse takes us. All these birds resemble Munis because they live in the forest, keep their eyes closed, observe silence, and remain motionless. These are many of the attributes of a Muni. Living in a cave, mauna brata, not speaking, wrapped in meditation, almost eating some roots and fruits. So birds follow similar standard. Perched on the branches of the trees, they become ecstatic listening to the flute. Not only that, Sakhi, even the branches of the trees are transformed in ecstasy when struck by the vibration of Krishna's flute song and begin to sprout new leaves out of ecstasy. That's why the verse Ruchira Prabalam, very beautiful shoots are there. Why? Because you may say, oh, beautiful shoots, yeah, I know what that means. But they are beautiful because they are expressing, as Jiva Goswami said, these are sattvika bhavs that the trees are showing, ecstatic symptoms, while receiving the sound of the flute. The shoots are symbolizing this ecstatic expression of the trees themselves. Remember Gurmaj speaking about the trees in Braj, giving shoots, flowers, fruit, all of them at the same time, according to the necessity, reacting in such a conscious way. So we have to bear in mind the things. In Vrindavan, even the most less complex forms of life is totally made of bhav. But the purport continues. So another gopi said, there are many gopis here in Iskagosti, exchanging opinions. Remember, they were saying this idea of, okay, even the munis are affected. The first one say, no, the munis are not touched by this. They remain atmaram. The other gopis say, no. See how the muni-like birds are affected and they will connect with the munis, we'll see. And another gopis started to develop on that regarding the uniqueness of the flute song, what we mentioned before. So that gopi said, it is impossible for anyone else to produce such enchanting music. Indra, Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, being primordial gods, travel throughout the universe and have extensive knowledge of the science of music. And yet, even these great personalities have never heard or composed music like that which emanates from Krishna's flute. As we mentioned the other day, he's even creating new notes. Now, there are seven notes, but he's playing as an eighth one that nobody knows, and composing new ragas on the spot, totally spontaneously. Sometimes it is said the word raga is it's a pun, because raga means this particular composition, musical composition, but also raga means attachment or affection. So it is said that out of raga, Krishna has created so many ragas. Now he creates raga after raga, out of raga, out of love for his devotees. In the Gopi Gita, there is a nice song. There is a nice verse in that connection, but we won't go there. That's a non-return ticket. And remember, we mentioned some of the effect of the flute, the different notes, and how it struck Indra and Brahma and Shiva and all these great personalities. Not only were not able to compose this, but when they heard that, collapsed, basically. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, indeed, Sakhi, the birds are so moved by the unique sound that in their ecstasy, they close their eyes and cling to the branches to avoid falling off the trees. So that's another idea. Why they are climbing to the branches? Some say to have a nice look, sight of Krishna. But others say, no, because if they don't take hold of something, who knows where they will end. So he's presenting this idea. Therefore, to avoid falling from the trees, the birds deliberately sit on leafy, flower-filled ones to prevent their falling when they enter a state of ecstasy and lose consciousness using the shoots as ropes to avoid falling. You can imagine the level of detail, no? How much this great personality center into the lila, no? To explain us how they connect all these details of the birds. No? A beautiful shoot, there is a branch, there is a bird, and for us it's, yes, I know, every day I see that. No, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, no, you don't understand. This is a reason for this to be like this, and the understand there's ecstasy in between. No, there is flute in between. So what's going on? What are the implications? Every word must have a meaning in the context of this. That's how our acharyas read and lived these verses. So, yeah, the shoots are beautiful because they are saving the birds not to fall. And that's, and again, the shoots are in themselves an ecstatic response from the trees to the flute, but simultaneously they serve the purpose to, no? So the birds in their own ecstasy can grab, catch hold of that. And no? So all of them are in ecstasy, but also they are complementing their respective situations. So there are many, many times in Shastra this is described. Krishna plays the flute and everyone is thrown into a pool of helplessness. No? Sometimes in India, in Vrindavan especially, it is more like a local version of it. But you have seen Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and she generally is playing a veena. So a veena generally has like two big parts on the two extremes and like the main body of the instrument in between. So in Vrindavan they kind of sometimes mention that Saraswati, the goddess of arts, in connection to Krishna playing flute, she's always holding this veena, which is a veena, is like a log of wood, they say, no? Like a big in the between. No? So she's like holding a log of wood because she's like drowning in an ocean of sweetness of Krishna's flute song. No? Like if you are in an ocean and drowning and you see some log, I'm safe here, I remain here. So they poetically bring down and say, oh, Saraswati is always holding to that log of wood, which is the veena. Because she's drowning, the goddess of learning and arts and music, she's drowning in an ocean of musicality and artistry and whatever, out of Krishna's flute song. It's too much for her. She's collapsing, so not to drown. Or, as we will see now it comes a very interesting unfolding on a more like interpretative or symbolic level, which is the meaning of the birds in connection to the sages and the tree and the branches. So now comes the idea of the tree as the tree of the Veda, and the Veda having different sakhas or branches, and which is the highest branch, and how these personalities are holding to the highest branch. Some acharyas will start to explain that like that, and saying the highest branch of the Veda, Nigama Kalpa Taror Galitam Phalam, is the Bhagavatam. So they are holding on to the Bhagavatam, we are there. So they won't fall. If you hold to the Bhagavatam, you won't fall, basically. Now there's another way of reading this in a way that may be more applicable also for us sadhakas. So let's go a little bit to that type of unfolding that Sanatana Goswami shares in his Brihad Vaishnav Tosani, his commentary. So he said the word Munaya, which is sages, he said refers to sages like the Kumaras. The four Kumaras, they are like the perfect classical example of a Muni. These four little boys that are not little nor boys, they are quite old. They are, the first almost living entity on the universe, but they remain eternally as boys. It is said because they are always engaged in Harikatha. So time is not passing for them. They remain eternally young. What does the verse say? Ayud Harati? So sound is coming and going, coming and going, and taking the life of everyone. One day less, another day. That's the message of the sun. Ajur Harati. Your life has been Harati. It's been taken. One day less. Not one day more. I have one more year. It's my birthday. You have one year less. But it is said, this. For those who are engaged in Uttama Shloka Bhartaya, in speaking about he who is praised by the most selected poetry, another way of saying those who are absorbing Harikatha, time is not passing in vain. Time is not affecting that those persons, basically. So in a very literal sense, the Kumaras are that example. They remain eternally young because they remain in the protective circle of Harikatha. So time is not affecting them. They have thousands and millions of years, but they are like babies. Like, wow. Showing how Harikatha takes us beyond time, which is basically the all-devouring, as Krishna says in the Gita, influence in this world, like it or not. I remember one devotee one made a very interesting painting. It was very artistic, very interesting. It was like a parade. And how do you say when you have the movies, when you are working with the machine, how is the name of the
reel?
But what you put in the reel, how do you call the
film?
The film. The film? The, yeah, so it was made of
frames.
Yeah, but the material that you use for the filming. Film in itself, okay. it's the verb and it's the also, okay. So it was like a path made of film, and on the film there were like money and beautiful men and women and all the things that we are running after. No? And there was one person depicted like running after those things. Mm-hmm. It's a whole scene. So it's a whole like intricate path of film and all these goals there and the people running. But the end of the film is like this, like mouth, like this, like metal mouth, like that devours everything with the form of a clock. No? So, I mean, if you see the whole picture, you understand the same meaning. No? Like time, everything converges into the time mouth, if you will. The all devouring, Krishna says. No? Kalarup. So, but there is the exception to the rule. No? So here we have the Kumars. So Sanatana Goswami says that, interestingly, the word Munaya refers, because till now the idea is these birds are like sages. Because of the sound of the flute, they behave like sages. Now the opposite idea will come. These sages have become birds in Vrindavan. So Sanatana Goswami introduces this. He said, the word Munaya refers to Atmarams, like the four Kumars, who have become birds in the forest in order to see Krishna. The two options are valid. The birds are behaving like sages, or the sages are behaving like birds. They are the great sages, sober personalities, have entered Braj in whatever form to take advantage of the sound of the flute. So Sanatana Goswami said, this shows that the sound of the flute attracts the sages away from their Brahman Samadhi. Because many of these sages also sometimes are depicted in their stages as non-devotional sages. There are different ways of conceiving these sages. Generally, the Kumars are depicted as Gyan Mishra Bhaktas or something. And we'll speak about Sukadeva Goswami. So they say they have given up the study of the Vedas. Now comes the whole analogy. No? They have given up the study of the Vedas and they are climbing into a particular branch, which is the specific section of the Vedas, which is beyond the general proposal of the Vedas. Mahaprabhu explained the famous word Atmarama Samunaya in this direction. So these sages, Sanatana Goswami say, have surpassed the branches of the Veda, which are filled with various divisions and fruits. Well, again, follow the analogy. Trees is giving fruits. So the Vedas are promoting karma kanda here and there, and there, do this and obtain this, but nistray gunya visaya veda. No, what is it? Try gunya visaya veda, nistray gunya bhavarjana. Krishna says to Arjuna, all these Vedas mostly are dealing with the three modes. So become transcendental to them and enter the Upanishadic realm, the most confidential level of teachings. So the idea is, we could say, the birds are sitting in a certain branch in such a way that they are not obstructed by the fruits and flowers so they can see Krishna, or taking the symbolic level, these birds are sages who have climbed the tree of the Vedas and have like left behind different branches with different proposals, and they're sitting in certain branches, so they are not, their vision or their perception of the flute song is not obstructed by the fruits and flowers of the tree, which may be all the offerings that the Vedas are giving. Do this and go to Swarga, obtain mukti, and So they have climbed above all of that and reached a certain place where those fruits are not interrupting their vision, their drinking of Krishna's flute song. So somehow they renounce the tree of the Vedas and they have taken shelter into the Bhagavatam, basically. In the tree of Vrindavan, if you want to. There are many ways of putting that. They left the Veda tree, they entered the Braja Dhruma, the tree in Vrindavan. So, and Sanatana Goswami concludes, they are silent to all topics except Krishna. So what else can deliver it on, basically? Shrotam api upanishadam dure harikatamrita. Famous verse that Jiva Goswami ascribes to Mahaprabhu, which means the sounds, as Guru Maharaj likes to quote, the sound of the Upanishads, what to speak of Karmakanda, the Upanishads, which are above Karmakanda and the Veda, are far from where Harikata can take you. Harikata in this case means Bhagavatam, basically. So in a special way, these birds, or sages, however you like, are being taken away from all other topics or other hearing and talking, and they are absorbing a particular direction. Balabhacharya translates the word Bigatanya Bachaha, which generally is connected that they became silent. Balabhacharya says, because Bigatanya Bachaha actually means something that their words have been taken from them. It's like a way of saying they were not speaking, but in a more poetic way. So Balabhacharya understands that in his commentary, saying, they, Bigatanya Bhajaha means, they from whom words about other subject matters have departed in a special way. Because you have Bigatanya. The word Bi also means Bishesh, or specially. Like they became silent in a special way, because you can be silent in an ordinary way or relatively special way, but in a very special way, which means they continue speaking, but they are not speaking prajalpa, or they are not speaking about something different from Krishna. That's what Srila Prabhupada said. What does it mean to be? Because in the Bhagavad Gita also, the devotee, in the different qualities of the devotee, one is his mauni, which means he's silent. So how to understand that the devotee is silent? We should stop speaking? He said, no, silent means that you are not speaking nonsense, basically. You are not promoting noise. That's silence. No noise. But Harikatha is nourishing to the environment. It's not noise. It's actually that something that is adding up. And as we spoke the other day, a real Vaishnava, as one sadhu recently described, if I have to describe a real devotee in one word or two, he will say, Abhyartha Kalatvam. Yesterday, I think we shared that concept, which means he or she is not willing to lose a second in his or her life of bhajan. Seriously trying to speak and hear, not in a fanatical way, not in an imposed way, but having the desire of, I want to be focused sincerely on this ideal. So there are different types of munis, since we are speaking about here, going back to the verse. You have the munis who are meditating on Brahman, at least on some stage. The four Kumars are depicted like that. The Bhagavatam depicts them then as being converted to Vaishnavism by smelling Tulsi and so on. Sukadev Goswami, in the beginning, it's also depicted as someone, Brahmavadi, absorbed in the bliss of Brahman, to the point that he was not aware of anything. He was not aware that he didn't have any clothes, basically. He was, as the Bhagavatam wants to make the point, he was running when he left the womb of his mother. And some ladies were having young girls were bathing naked in a lake, and they saw Sukadeva Goswami coming naked, but they never covered. Because they realize he's totally beyond any sense of body, male, female, naked, not naked. I mean, he's not aware he's male, he's naked. He's totally beyond. And when Vyasadev came after him, they covered. And Vyasadev said, why you are covering with me and not with my son? Because he has no sense of duality. You are making this separation. Oh, lady. So He was like, wow. Of course, all this is building up to the idea, such a personality, Sukadeva Goswami, totally beyond anything, and he became attracted to the Bhagavatam. So what must the Bhagavatam be about? Totally transcendental topic. Just in case you think, oh, these ladies with Krishna, it seems like some mundane romanticism. I mean, it attracted Sukadev. He was beyond everything from this world. So there are this type of munis, the one attracted to Brahman. You have munis attracted to meditate. And Paramatma, like Subhari Rishi, he was a yogic absorption, meditating down below the water, underwater sadhana, interesting. Or you have also the munis who are more absorbed in Bhagavan feature of the Absolute. And of course, between those two latter ones, you have the ones absorbed in Bhagavan in terms of Aishwarya, and then like the four Kumars after being converted, or those who are absorbed in Bhagavan in terms of Madhurya. Sukadeva Goswami, journalist, mentioned as an example of that, after being converted again. So this is a very, very important point. I cannot elaborate enough. And Madhu Gurmaj spoke about this these days, that the Bhagavatam wants to make. Sukadev Goswami was, Atmaram, was a muni, like this verse is speaking about munis. He had no attraction to this world. He was totally beyond the gunas. But he was attracted to the Bhagavatam. That's the famous verse, Atmaram Stamunayo. No verse Mahaprabhu explained in more ways than that one. Atmaram Stamunayo Nirgranta Pirukrame. It is said that the qualities of Hari are such that even an Atmaram, who is Atmaram means Atmaram, Ram means pleasure, Atma means oneself. One derives pleasure from one's own self, doesn't need anything from outside. Self-satisfied, sometimes translated. Atmaram cha munayo, the word munayo comes there like here. The munis, who are self-satisfied, Nirgranta Pirukrame, who are beyond Nirgranta, beyond all knots, beyond all type of conditioning, beyond all prescriptions of Shastra even, they are totally independent. They themselves become attracted. Kurbanti Haitukim Bhaktim Itambuta Gunahari. They become attracted to Bhagavan. Such are his qualities, such are the qualities of Bhakti. So that's the main one of the main points of the Bhagavatam. Like Bhakti is about Jnana. Premise about mukti, because Sukadev Goswami, we you can depict him, if you want, as a jnani who attained almost the ultimate state of mukti. But he himself was, I mean, he ran off from home, as we know the story. I think I mentioned that some twice ago. No? 16 years in the womb, already interesting process there. And her mother was just, I mean, get out of here, of here. But when Sukadev was born, he said, I get out of here. And he left home and he ran into the forest. And as we know, Vyasadeva sent some say woodcutters, some say some disciples that go to the forest to cut wood. So the point is the same, with some verses from the Bhagavatam. And that same boy that ran from home returned running back home. So the question is, what made Sukadev run back home? And the point is, he's Nirgranta, he's beyond Shastra. Pariksit will make that question about that. He's beyond all Shastra, why he took the trouble to study the Bhagavatam? He's Atmaram, he's beyond this world. Why did he take this? I mean, to study a book is trouble. No, it's not a joke. It's not like, I will study the Bhagavatam like casually. No, no, to study any book is trouble, in the wood sense of the term. Sukadev went through that. So why? Again, because the substance of the Bhagavatam is totally transcendental, post-liberated, and so on. So this is a very important point that this verse also is making. Even the munis are living their muni-like nature and being drawn more than that. And one of the name muni, one of the meanings of the name muni is bird. So again, it's mentioned that this munis, again, transcended certain areas of the Vedas and took shelter in the Vrindavan tree and hearing this flute song over and over again. Give me a few minutes and we are almost there. Balabhacharya, again going to him for a minute, he has very nice commentaries on the Bhagavatam. So he describes the flute song here as indistinctly sweet. Indistinctly, you say sweet. So what's the meaning of that? He said, if we take the birds as birds, not necessarily as sages, but as birds, that the birds do not, I mean, the gopis are saying this in their gopi bhav, but the birds are not in gopi bhav. They are just perceiving like an unconceivable strand of sweetness coming to them through the sound of the flute, but they cannot fully ascertain what's that. They just become like shocked by that and captured. It's like if you are experiencing something that is too sweet, too overwhelmed, that you don't even start to feel what's going on, what's happening, what's that. I remember first time, I mean, not to give myself as an example or to compare with these great personalities, but I remember one of the first time I was chanting Harinam in Japa. I didn't even have a Japa mala, but I made one with string. I went to the church, to the floor, rooftop of the flat I was living. Do not tell my neighbors that. And I cut the rope that they were using to hang the clothes. One part of it, not all. And I make it 54 knots. So I didn't take the whole thing to make 108. So I did half of that. I was relatively compassionate. So I was chanting with that rope and those notes. And I remember I experienced something, I don't know, I cannot explain what I experienced at that moment. But again, it was not in my plan and it was not my own bitter truth. It was just, and I can't relate to this because I was not like, I mean, what's going on? What's happening? I was not able to figure out what's coming. What's coming through that sound, basically. So I was just thinking about that. Eventually, of course, you try to make sense of that. You start to know more about Srinam and what's the effects and what's actually going on. But at one point, it's like we are just like, the current is coming and you are feeling, wow, this is like nothing I have ever experienced before. I want to remain here forever. And of course, another idea, just to conclude, mention this implication in this verse, that if by Krishna wants to give his grace, it is not impossible even for a bird, which generally is connected as not a very super intelligent entity, to become a Muni, to become a great sage, basically, and engage in bhajan of Krishna. Or, by Krishna's grace, by Krishna's flute song, it's not impossible also either for great Munis to become birds. No. The two options seem like not very probable. No, generally, you don't see like a bird suddenly like start to behave like a Muni. A bird is a bird. And generally, you don't see a Muni behaving like a bird. by the strength of Krishna's grace or Krishna's flute, which are synonyms, birds can adopt the Muni's nature and Munis can adopt the bird's nature. And they can like... So the conclusion is it is difficult to decide. What's going on in this verse? This is the Acharya say. In one sense, we don't know. We don't know if the Munis, the birds of Vrindavan are following Muni Dharma, or the Munis are following bird Dharma. Who is following, who became who, basically? We don't know. As their heads are spinning, the commentators, our heads are spinning also, like with the sound of Krishna. So, as usual, of course, the conclusion of this is what? From the side of the gopis. These birds, again, are so fortunate, have become totally aloof from sense gratification, from all attachment from this world, are living a totally renounced life, eating this, living in one branch and here. So, I'm enjoying Krishna's flute, drinking it. So, similarly, if we will be really blessed, we will be experiencing what they are experiencing. So, in that level of experience of distress, the gopis join hands and let's engage in some like group chain prayer. Oh creator, when will we receive the blessing and good fortune of being born as birds in Vrindavan in our next life? Not crying exactly, the gopis are really meaning that. Again, it's not, try to conceive that they're crazy, no, in love. Because birth, after birth, they are changing their prospect in the next lifetime. We want to be cows, we want to be bamboo, we want to be devis, we want to be birds. But again, even though they change so much, the background reason for that change is always the same. Whatever facilitates our approach in divine service to Krishna. So this time is the turn of the birds. So let's become birds. And to finish, since we are speaking about birds, I would like to share you, to read some few verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Mahaprabhu is instructing Sanatana Goswami's famous section, Sanatana Siksha. And he describes the sound of the flute as a bird. So somehow there is a connection between what we are speaking and how this, the effect of the sound of the flute in the gopis, which also is in connection to what we are speaking. So these are verses 141 till 144, just in case, chapter 21, Madhyalila. So I'll read them and we are ready to close our session. It says like this. The sound of Krishna's flute spreads in the four directions. Mahaprabhu is speaking about this ecstatically. Even though Krishna vibrates his flutes within this universe, its sound pierces the universal covering and goes to the spiritual sky. Thus, the vibration enters the ears of all inhabitants. It specially enters Golok Vrindavan Dham and attracts the minds of the young damsels of Braja Bhumi, bringing them forcibly to where Krishna is present. The vibration of Krishna's flute is very aggressive, and it breaks the vows of all chaste women. Indeed, its vibration takes them forcibly from the laps of their husbands. Try to imagine the situation. The vibration of his flute attracts even the goddesses of fortune in the Vaikuntha planets, to say nothing of the poor damsels of Vrindavan. Poor way of saying that, of course. In comparison to the Aishwarya, but actually, as we know, they are the real election. The vibration of his flute slackens the knots of their underwear even in front of their husbands. It's like a way of saying. Thus the gopis are forced to abandon their household duties and come before Lord Sri Krishna. In this way, all social etiquette, shame and fear are vanquished. We still are so full of shame and fear, so we need to somehow transcend that. The gopis are the unique example. The vibration of his flute causes all women to dance. The vibration of his flute is just like a bird that creates a nest within the ears of the gopis and always remains prominent there, not allowing any other sound to enter their ears. Indeed, the gopis cannot hear anything else, nor they are able to concentrate on anything else, not even to give a suitable reply. Such are the effects of the vibration of Sri Krishna's flutes. So very beautifully this is described here, no? Like a flute song, like a nest in the gopis' ears, remaining there and making them again override, transgress all fear, all shame. Another way of saying, we also need to, as sadhakas, to transgress, to transcend all fear or shame, and that we'll be able to do by the flute call, or by the clarion call that comes through parampara, through guru and the sadhus. We as sadhakas should culture this careful attention, like the gopis are hearing, or like the birds are described hearing, to hear in the proper direction, the proper things. This is what Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami, our Prayodhan Tattvacharya, the personification of the goal to attain, asking Mahaprabhu, what advice do you give me? He starts saying, Grame Katana Sunibe Grame Bartana Kaibe. Do not speak gossip, do not hear gossip. Another way of telling him, just hear Harikata and speak Harikata indirectly. Sometimes we need those type of things first to hear. No? Do not be a gossip person. Which is another way of saying, speak Harikata. But maybe if I tell you, always speak Harikata, maybe it doesn't reach you that much if I tell you, do not speak gossip. Oh yeah, Mara, thank you so much. So we are to control this tongue, which is the most powerful of all senses, all the ears, through sound. Sound is the most subtle and powerful element. So, and that's a characteristic of a devotee, you know, how Krishna describes the devotee in the Gita, Satatam Kirtayantamam. She's always doing kirtan of me. Kirtaniya sadahari, nityam bhagavata sivaya. All the things are in connection. Always hearing Harikatha, always hearing Harinam. The flute song is Mahamantra. If you want to create some parallel of the flute song of Krishna, we say, I'm not hearing the flute song. Although we hear Murli playing very nice rag, I hope you have the flute there for offering something to Dauji Gupa. But Mahamantra is there, or Gayatri Mantra. All those are forms of Krishna's flute call. Again, it's the call. Guru's instruction is Krishna's flute call. It's the calling to a particular. Give your attention in there in some way. I mean, that's the only thing we can give our attention. That's our offering. That's where we are. No? Where our attention is, that's our reality. No? I remember seeing, and with this I'm finishing, I remember seeing one TED talk of one, how do you say, pickpocketer? He was famous. I don't know how he was famous and he was not in jail, but he was giving the talk there. And it was interesting. He was speaking the whole lecture and calling people about how he can pickpocket anyone at any moment without you realizing. But it's just a matter of where is your attention. If you know how to take people's attention, whatever you want, you are not realizing I'm taking everything from your pockets. And he was doing like that, speaking with people. And how much money do you... And the people, I don't have my wallet. Oh, let me see the pickpocket. Oh, here it is. And the person was like, when do you take them? The person was like, I never realized when that happened. Or there's this famous exercise, psychological exercise. You can look it for YouTube. That there are like some... How it was? That people passing like on balls. Have you seen them? And they say, okay. And the exercise is, you count some how many times they pass the ball to each other. It's like for 1 minute. But, and so you concentrate on watching them, like 1, 2, 3, 4. And at the end of the exercise, I say, did you see the monkey? Or something like that. I say, what? Monkey? What monkey? It was just, and you go again to the video, and in the middle of that comes a guy dressed as a monkey, dancing like me. And it's really obvious, but you never saw him. Why? Because your attention was somewhere else. So that reality was non-existent. So the point is, whatever your attention is, that's your reality. So it's an important point for us what to do with our attention, especially nowadays, social media, and our attention is so much like perverted and distracted and multi-branched and multitasking. So it's important as a service, especially in our Raga Nuga project, which has a lot to do with what do we do with our mind and serving that mind, important lessons we can learn from here, from the gopis, from the Bhagavad, and so on. Anyhow, some thoughts. So we will stop here, and this way we conclude this particular verse with the description of the gopis of absorbed birds, like munis or muni-like birds, hearing the drinking the sound of the flute from these unique branches of, if you want to make a parallel with the Vedas and so on. And next class we will go again from the sky. We will move from air to another of the Pancha Mahabhutas, another of the five elements. From air we will go to water. So next verse the gopis will direct their attention to the rivers of Vrindavan. So let's see what comes in that one. We will close with this prayer that Uddhava is offering, always glorifying the song of the gopis, which has the potential to purify the three worlds. We are in the midst of those three worlds, so we pray to be sprinkled by some of that nectar. Vandinanda brajasrinam padarenu nabhikshnasa isam harikatat gitam punati bhuvanatriyam. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Venu Gita ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Binda ki jai, Gaur Priman Hari.